From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast. This is a soundcheck session from our archives. Those archives go back 20 years, but this session is slightly more recent. It's from 2017. This is the Soundcheck Podcast. I'm John Schaefer. Walt Whitman famously wrote, "I contain multitudes." Well, so does the music of Caitlin Aurelia Smith. Her electronic works might remind you of 1980s New Age, 1970s Krautrock, the 60s experimentalists like Don Buckla and Morton Subotnick, and her latest album called The Kid is full of big ideas about time and identity and finding your place in the world. Caitlin Aurelia Smith is here today to play a song from the forthcoming record. With an intention, here is Caitlin Aurelia Smith live on Soundcheck. That is Caitlin Aurelia Smith, live in the Soundcheck studio with her song An Intention, which is from the forthcoming record called The Kid. Talk about containing multitudes. How many different chorus effects are on your voice there?
There's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this album, it seems to be a concept record of sorts, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the concept of The Kid?
Well, it has a few, actually. Mostly it's a journey through the four stages of life, through my interpretation, taking you from birth to death. And it's about the challenges that one faces in forgetting their kid energy and how often we're reminded of it as we get older and how often we're pulled away from it with routine and structure and just the things we got to do.
Right. Well, that song begins with the line, "The hardest part of finding out your name is owning it and all that it contains." I probably wouldn't ask this of someone who had a less memorable name, but, you know, you have a very unusual middle name, a very common last name. Was that line, is that born of your own experience? Learning to own your name and all that it contains?
I don't think I've figured that out. And actually, the middle name in my name is something that I created for myself because my actual middle name is Anne. Mm-hmm. And it was too much for me to be like Caitlin Anne Smith.
And you needed something a little more golden.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that case, you know, it isn't just finding your name. There isn't a sense of ownership. You gave yourself that middle name.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me personally, a virtue that I really admire and try and pursue is being accountable and being impeccable with your word. So I think that line just touches on that.
Yeah. So the song is called An Intention. This is from early on in the record.
Yeah.
Which in sort of concept album form is a two LP set, right?
Yeah. That's and each great. Side is a stage of the life.
Right. And the instrumentation, now what you have here, you know, there is a small keyboard, as we've grown accustomed to seeing in electronic music. But your main axe over the years has been the Buchla modular synthesizer, right?
Yeah, the Buchla.
Buchla.
Yeah.
So explain what that is and how it's different from the more conventional keyboard-oriented synths.
Yeah. So this is semi-modular. It's a suitcase synthesizer that Don Buchla designed with the intention of performing and having it fit perfectly underneath the plane seat.
Wow. That's practical.
Yeah. And the reason why it's semi-modular is just that he made a few decisions of hardwiring things that he knew a composer or an artist would always want, which is like the VCA and the envelope all to be wired together. And the main difference is just that a modular synthesizer would have nothing wired, and it won't do anything unless you wire it.
Right. So in the old days, you would have seen, you know, patch cords going.
Which
from,
are these?
Right. Now they're much smaller.
Well, it just depends on which. There's so many modulars and semi-modulars, yeah. And you can always override that hard wiring called normalizing.
Right. Well, you know, the reason this is kind of interesting and important is, you know, back in the 60s, the synthesizer could have gone, it did go in two different ways. You know, you had Robert Moog, you know, creating the Moog synthesizer, and that kind of spawned all of these keyboard, piano-inspired synthesizers. But Buchla went another way, and it seemed to be that he was trying to free electronic music from the tyranny of the piano keyboard.
Yeah. Even though it's still there.
Even though it's still there.
Yeah. But it's also arbitrary because I can make it do whatever I want it to do. It doesn't have to be a keyboard. This doesn't have to be the scale that it's showing it.
Right. Now, on the new record, at one point you use like one of the old vintage analog synthesizers, right?
Well, this is a vintage analog synthesizer.
Right.
So actually all of them, or most of them on the new album are.
right? Yeah. So like the old EMS synthesizer.
Yeah, the Synthy 100.
The Synthy 100, gosh. Yeah.
Loved it.
So you just don't have any time for modern digital gear or?
Oh, no, I mean, I like the hybrid, but I don't really have like a boundary of what I like and what I don't like. Like, or I guess I should say, I don't have a set thing in my mind that
you're not dogmatic about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like in the moment of the sound that it makes.
Mm-hmm. And for you, is that how composing starts? You find a sound, or is there usually some sort of compositional idea that gets you going?
For me, it always starts in my head, in my voice, and just starts simply with a melody, or a lot of times, because I have a very active dreaming mind. A lot of times I get things in my sleep and then I'll wake up and be like, oh, what was that?
Well, you know, big ideas are not the specific province of the new record. The previous album, Ears, had some pieces that kind of tackled big ideas, and some of them therefore turned out to be very big pieces, like the one you're going to do for us next called Existence in the Unfurling. What was the compositional process here? Because this piece goes through a number of clearly delineated different movements.
Yeah. Well, that whole album, it was supposed to be a journey through a futuristic jungle. And it was inspired by the movie called Nausicaä, Valley of the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was kind of like my score to my favorite parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. And not to replace the original score, because the original score is amazing.
Who's that by?
Joe Hisashi.
Okay.
One of my favorite composers. So good. Yeah, so what I'm going to play is the last piece on the album, which is kind of like my overall interpretation of the movie.
It's a pretty expansive piece, and it will take us a while to hear. So Caitlin Aurelia Smith is with us in the Soundcheck studio. This song is from last year's album, Ears. It's called Existence in the Unfurling. Here's another live performance from Caitlin Aurelia Smith.
I'm not the same.
Once again, Caitlin Aurelia Smith with a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio of a piece called Existence in the Unfurling. And Caitlin, that is recognizably the piece as it appears on the album, On Ears, but it's not exactly the same piece. So is improvisation a part of your performance practice?
Yeah, it's always within a boundary.
So the shape of the piece...
Yeah, the shape of the piece and the harmonic structure is the same. Sometimes I'll like add a few new harmonic things.
Yeah.
But that one is really fun to play because it uses a lot of layered long delays to create kind of this ecosystem of a bunch of sounds. And so every time I play it, it's fun for me, especially in headphones, because of the panning effects. The phasing is always really different.
And so you said this was sort of inspired by the Japanese film, Nausicaa.
Yeah.
Great piece of anime or manga, I suppose.
Yeah.
As a kind of alternate score to that film.
Well, the whole album is.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
This is like kind of the climactic part of it.
You know, towards the end, I could have sworn I was hearing saxes and flutes specifically.
Yeah.
So can you improvise a tone color, or does that have to be kind of done and loaded in the machine before you set out on this journey?
No, I can improvise a tone color, but you were probably also hearing, because there's a blend of, like the way I have it set up, every time I play a note on here, it's also triggering other things that I have set up, just depending on what gate is open. I don't want to get too nerdy.
Yeah.
but so you are hearing a blend of actual saxophone recordings, like a sample.
Right, right.
And then also blending this to sound like a flute or like a saxophone.
And for folks who want to get a little nerdy, a gate is really just what it sounds like. It's kept closed, and when you trigger the right button, the gate opens and you hear the sound that's behind it.
Yeah.
And if you've, you know, stored some saxophone sounds back there, that's when you hear that.
Yeah.
When the gate opens.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's fun because then you can put like offsets on it so that it doesn't exactly open at that moment.
Oh, wow. Now you really are getting
nerdy.
I know.
Sorry. If you asked me to. Well.
Now, getting back to the new record, The Kid, we talked before, you know, the kind of the concept that takes you through the four stages of life. When you get to stage four, the fourth side of the two LP set, it's not strictly electronic music anymore. You've woven in a kind of a chamber music ensemble at that point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's in there throughout the whole album, but my intention was to start the album darker feeling, more electronic, and then as you go through the life cycle, to become more sophisticated in its arrangement and its composition. Like the earlier songs, the rhythm is intentionally more awkward, more juvenile.
And did you do all the like scoring and arranging of...
Yeah,
of
everything on the album I did.
So do you have a kind of background in classical composition and part writing and all
I
that?
I do, yeah. I studied classical guitar and went to school for composition and film scoring and sound engineering.
Oh.
And then haven't touched a guitar in a really long time.
And you also, a couple of years back, did a collaboration with Suzanne Ciani, who at the height of the 1980s New Age movement was like one of the leading women in the figure. I mean, this would have been before your time probably, but was she kind of an early inspiration for you in this field?
Definitely. Yeah. She's, I mean, in all of her outputs of music, because my mom also used to play her piano music in our house all the time.
And people who have never heard the name Suzanne Ciani have heard her work because, you know, commercials used to have.
Yeah.
Like
she did the Coca-Cola sound.
When you open the bottle and you hear that fizz, that was her. Yeah,
she's such an inspiration.
Yeah. So in the meantime, you know, this is kind of an exercise in cognitive dissonance, almost watching you play some of this music live, because the fingers are flying and I'm not sure what they're actually doing, you know, but it's great fun to watch.
I know, it's I have no idea what it looks like to watch it, but I always... I'm thinking that it must be really confusing to watch because
it is.
Because of all the delays, I'm playing stuff ahead of when you'll hear it, or sometimes
oh,
like you'll hear it when I decide to open the gate later.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, Caitlin, it's been really great of you to bring the equipment in and to play for us today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me here.
You've been listening to an episode of the Soundcheck podcast from our archives. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. You can see and hear much more on our website. Check it out at newsounds.org.